Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. Before we get started today, we'd like to welcome a new radio station joining the Minnesota Military Radio Network. That would be KBGY 107.5 FM out of Faribault. Thank you for joining our growing group of stations carrying Minnesota Military Radio. On today's show, we'll visit with Minnesota's State Chair of the Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, ESGR, and get an update on ending veteran homelessness here in Minnesota. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
National Cybersecurity Awareness Month, celebrated every October, was created as a collaborative effort between government and industry to ensure every American has the resources they need to stay safer and more secure online. Since its inception a decade ago, under leadership from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the National Cybersecurity Alliance, National Cybersecurity Awareness Month has grown exponentially, reaching small and medium-sized businesses, corporations, educational institutions, and young people across the nation. Cybersecurity begins with a simple message everyone using the internet can adopt. Stop, think, connect. Take security and safety precautions. Understand the consequences of your actions and behaviors online and enjoy the benefits of the internet. When you cross the street, you look both ways to make sure it's safe. Staying safe on the internet is similar. It takes some common sense steps. Stop. Before you use the internet, take time to understand the risks and learn how to spot potential problems. Think. Take a moment to be certain the path ahead is clear. Watch for warning signs and consider how your actions online could impact your safety or your family's. Connect. Enjoy the internet with greater confidence, knowing you've taken the steps to safeguard yourself and your computer. Critical digital infrastructures encompass the global network of computers. Data and websites that support everything from financial transactions, transportation systems, and emergency response systems to healthcare records and personal communications in cyberspace. Cyber experts say taking a common sense precaution can keep sensitive information secure while also preventing identity theft and fraud. For more information on National Cybersecurity Awareness Month and how to keep safe online, visit staysafeonline.org. Protect yourself and help keep the web a safer place for everyone.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now from the ESGR, the Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, is retired Brigadier General Nick Ostapenko. General, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Tom, thank you for the opportunity to visit with you today and to speak with your listeners.
General, I understand that you served some 34 years of military service.
I did indeed.
And you started out as an enlisted man?
I did. I enlisted on September 1 of 1971, was enlisted for approximately 4 years, I think it was. It's kind of hard to remember now. and went through OCS, was commissioned as an infantry officer, and then completed 34 years of service several years ago.
And he retired as Brigadier General and the Assistant Adjutant General, Army Joint Force Headquarters, St. Paul, with the Minnesota Army National Guard.
I did, Tom. As I mentioned to you before our show here today, I'm living proof that if you stick around long enough, they'll promote you.
Well, sir, there aren't very many people that make it to general officer, so you put in a good 34 years, and I'm sure you earned every bit of it. And as you look back on it, was it a good 34 years? Did you enjoy it, sir?
Terrific. Wouldn't trade it.
Wouldn't trade it for anything.
Well, I don't know about for anything, but I wouldn't trade it for just about anything.
All right, sir. And you live up in Duluth, Minnesota now, and you're a practicing attorney.
I do, Tom. I'm with the law firm of Johnson, Killen, and Seiler in Duluth, Minnesota. I've been there for about 37 years.
And you're not slowing down yet, sir?
Well, I'm slowing down a little bit, but hopefully it won't be too noticeable.
An active corporate practice up there?
It has been an active trial and business practice for many years.
Now, General, I understand that you've been helping the ESGR, Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, for quite a few years?
Well, it was the year I retired from the Army Guard here in Minnesota that I was invited to serve on ESGR. I looked into the opportunity, recognized ESGR as an organization that I wanted to be a part of, and have been with it ever since.
And recently you were appointed as the chair, the head of the ESGR.
for Minnesota. I was appointed chair for the state of Minnesota. ESGR is organized in a way, it's nationally. We've got all 50 states covered, as well as the territories and protectorates. So there's 54 entities. I'm just one of 54. I cover the state of Minnesota, serve as chair. I want to point out from the outset that ESGR is a volunteer-centric organization. What I mean by that is that the bulk of our members are volunteers that are not compensated for their time, that work because it is a noble cause. And in the state of Minnesota, we have four full-time employees and about 125 volunteers.
That's pretty heavily volunteer, isn't it, sir?
Very, very so. Yes, sir.
Now, General, can you explain to our listeners ESGR? A lot of people heard of it, Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve. Now, what's the mission? What does the ESGR do?
ESGR is a DOD, Department of Defense organization, whose staff and volunteers seek to foster a culture in which all employers support and value the employment and military service of members of the National Guard and Reserve. ESGR does this by advocating mutually beneficial initiatives, recognizing outstanding employer support, increasing awareness of applicable laws and policies, resolving potential conflicts between employers and their service members, and acting as the employer's principal advocate within DOD. The end state, as I have already touched on briefly, is that all employers support and value the employment of members of the National Guard and Reserve, and by doing so, increase the readiness of the reserve component.
We're speaking with retired Brigadier General Nick Ostapenko on Minnesota Military Radio about the ESGR, the Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve. So, General, we've got employers all over Minnesota that employ Guard and Reserve in this state. And, of course, we don't have any active duty bases, but we've got about, I suppose we've got 14,000 Army and Air National Guard troops, and we've got thousands of reserve troops. And when they're called to active duty, which they've been called a lot since September 11, 2001, puts a burden on those employers. But the laws are such in this country that there are some rights that those service members have with regard to their jobs with those employers. And these employers are aware of it, I'm sure, and the soldiers and airmen are aware of it. But can you just tell us a little bit about that? Puts a lot of stress, I think, on those employers when they're one of their valued employees are gone for a while, but they deal with it, and a lot of the employers step up and deal with it happily.
That's right, Tom. The analogy often used is that a reserve component service member is akin to a three-legged stool, where one leg that supports that service member is a relationship with his or her family. The second leg is a relationship between that service member and the service component in which they serve, as far as their duties and responsibilities there. And the third leg is the relationship between the service member and the employer. And that service member will not be able to achieve balance unless there is harmony with all three. We don't deal with relationships with the family. We don't deal with relationships with the reserve component, but we do deal squarely with the relationship between the service member and the employer. And that's what we seek to make better and foster better through a number of initiatives. Our customers include all employers, all uniformed service members, and the families of affected service members. And we seek to influence and make that relationship between service members and employers better through education, through military outreach, through employer outreach, and also through a series of programs that are in place to help educate and make sure that employers and service members know what their duties and responsibilities are under the law, and to help them in situations when there may be some questions.
Sir, we've seen a lot of support for our service members and their families, especially in the last 12, 14 years. How are we doing with the employers in Minnesota? Do they support the Guard and Reserve pretty well?
I think they do, Tom. And what Tom hasn't mentioned up to this point in time is that he kindly served as our master of ceremonies a few months ago. at an event. It's an annual event where we do recognize employers for their support of Guard and Reserve members. And this process starts by the service member oftentimes nominating their employer for recognition. And what that is what's called a Patriot Award. And I won't get into the process of doing that right now, but the bottom line is that we have a number of employers in the state of Minnesota who have gone above and beyond what they're required to do under the law. And in this past year, we had one employer from Minnesota, General Mills, that received the highest recognition that can be bestowed to a company by the Secretary of Defense, and that was General Mills receiving the Freedom Award.
So just another example of employers really treating our Guard and Reserve very, very well, because those service members nominated the employer for going above and beyond the call of duty to support them in their service activities.
Yes, Tom, and the Freedom Award is a very unique and prestigious award because there's only 15 given out across the entire United States of America in any given year.
General, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk more about those awards and the outstanding employers we have in Minnesota. We've been talking to retired Brigadier General Nick Ostapenko on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been talking to retired Brigadier General Nick Ostapenko, who is now the chair of the Minnesota ESGR, Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve. In general, we were talking about what you do for ESGR and what your volunteers do. And one of the things that I think we should talk about a little bit is the Guard and Reserve have been more or less on a war footing since 2001, and they've been called on to be a very ready and very trained force. And it seems that since the active duty forces are being further cut back by sequestration, that there's going to be more and more pressure in the future on the Guard and Reserve to be ready to step up and participate.
Tom, there's been a shift from the Guard and Reserve acting as a strategic reserve to them acting as an operational reserve. And what I mean by that is that the missions worldwide are beyond the capability of the active component, and the reserve component is being called upon to fill in the missions that the active component is not able to cover. So that has resulted in deployments worldwide. You've read the newspaper, you've seen the television pieces, you've listened to the members that have been guests on your show explain that better than I can. But the bottom line is that reserve component members have been called upon to step away from their employment relationships as well as their family relationships to fulfill their military duties. And again, that's what ESGR seeks to assist with, and that's that relationship between employers and employees. Even in a period of time where deployments may be reduced, we have to remember that reserve component service members have to be ready. And they have to train to get to be ready, and they're going to be needing to take time away from work and employment to fulfill that responsibility as well.
So, General, is part of your job at the ESGR to educate employers and the service members on what their rights are and what to expect because they have to stay trained and be ready and probably be deployed?
That's a huge part, Tom. Education is at the center of the circle for ESGR. We need to get the word out. We have been getting the word out as far as rights and responsibilities that the service members have, rights and responsibilities that the employers have, and how to achieve that balance as envisioned by the Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act, otherwise known as USERRA. So we have a lot of information about that. And that information is so very easily accessible to both service members and employers by simply going to www.esgr.mil. And that will take you to ESGR's website, which has educational information on it and a whole host of other information that it's readily readily available, and also by a few additional clicks that you'll find when you go to that website, you can actually come to Minnesota's specific page on that website, which has information which is specific to the state of Minnesota.
In general, as you mentioned in the first segment, in addition to education, you also recognize employers that go above and beyond the call of duty to take care of their service members, employees.
We'd like to recognize each and every employer who employs a reserve component service member, first and foremost, by virtue of the fact that they employ a reserve component service member. We'd like to recognize them for that. And beyond that, we'd like to recognize employers and do recognize employers that go above and beyond what's required under the law. We have so many employers that do so many wonderful things for their service members that make their time away from work and home and family so much more tolerable. We have examples where employers come in and make arrangements to have the lawn cut, the grass cut, the snow removed, make up the difference in pay between the service members' military pay and their civilian pay, and I could go on and on. But we do have a component here where we want to recognize those employers who do such a great job in supporting our service members.
We're speaking with the chair of the Minnesota ESGR, retired Brigadier General Nick Ostapenko, on Minnesota Military Radio. General, one of the other things that I think that you deal with is if there's some type of an issue with a returning serviceman from a deployment, you do some mediation to help with some issues?
Whenever there's an issue that arises between a service member and an employer, we are available at no cost to the service member or the employee to answer questions. And if there is a disagreement between the service member and the employer, to act as a mediator, as a neutral, that will try to find common ground. We have tremendous success accomplishing that mission through the use of our ombudsmen who are trained for that purpose. And here in the state of Minnesota, I am proud to say we have a number of very, very qualified ombudsmen who are ready, willing, and able to assist employers and service members in finding a solution.
In general, I think there was a fourth leg of education, recognition, mediation, and some you advocate for some service members. How does that work?
ESGR advocates both on behalf of service members and employers across a broad spectrum, a little bit, you know, in tandem with other organizations. And those initiatives that are on behalf of employers and service members basically promote the importance of employer support through regular communications to military leadership, and also serve as a communication link between employers and the Department of Defense.
So, sir, I think you told me you had 125 volunteers that work with ESGR. I would assume they're scattered all over the state?
They are, and we have the state broken down, Tom, into seven regions. Each region has a chair that works with other volunteers in that region. And we're broken down on a regional basis because we not only want to have the ability to connect with service members within the region, but also employers within the region. And we find that's easier to do on a seven-part model as opposed to just trying to take on the whole state of Minnesota as one piece. So we've got the state broken down into seven regions. We have seven region chairs who in turn work with a number of other volunteers, and that comprises our team of about 125.
In general, I own a business, and I'm an employer, and I've signed what's called an ESGR Statement of Support. Could you explain that to our listeners?
Yes, Tom. Thanks for mentioning that. Statement of Support is really the cornerstone of our employer outreach initiative, and the Statement of Support basically asks employers to support their service member, and by doing so, they are recognized and are given a nice certificate to hang in their lobby or whatever the case may be to make sure other people understand that they support the military and the defense of this great nation.
And, sir, based on people that were at that banquet that I emceed for you, there must be a lot of employers in Minnesota that have signed statements of support.
There have. We have thousands.
So is that like any other state, or is that one case, again, where Minnesota is right at the front?
You know, I think we're pretty average in that regard. I wish I could report right now that we're above average, like Lake Wobegon, but we're working harder to improve on that.
So the relationship between our service members and our employers in Minnesota is pretty good.
It's pretty good, and we're hoping to make it better.
General, we've just got about a minute left. Any final thoughts about your position as chair of the ESGR and all the great work going on here in Minnesota?
Well, it's just a real honor and a privilege for me to work with such an eager and ambitious group of volunteers across the state of Minnesota who are focusing on making the lives of our service members and their employers better. We're here, ready, willing, and able to serve, and given the opportunity to do so, we will give it our best.
General, I'd like to thank you for stopping by and joining us on Minnesota Military Radio today.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks again for the invitation.
Thank you, sir. That was retired Brigadier General Nick Ostapenko, the chair of the Minnesota ESGR on Minnesota Military Radio. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll get an update on ending veterans homelessness here in Minnesota. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelato.
Veterans at our 5-state veterans homes enjoy the benefits received from volunteer contributions. Our volunteers contribute significantly to the success of our operations. By sharing laughter, smiles, or just a friendly ear, they improve the quality of life and the morale of our residents. Our veterans enjoy a wide variety of recreational activities, thanks to the generous donations of time and money from communities around the state. It is impossible to calculate the amount of caring and sharing that these volunteers provide the residents at our homes. Our veterans put everything on the line to protect our freedom. We may never be able to repay them for their sacrifice, but we can show them just how much we appreciate all they have done. If you or someone you know would like to make a difference, please visit MinnesotaVeteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelato. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Eric Grundahl, who serves as the Special Advisor on Ending Veteran Homelessness in the state of Minnesota. Eric, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be here.
Eric, I think we last had you on in November last year when you were just starting a position to try to eliminate something that personally I think is going to be really difficult to eliminate completely, and that is homelessness for our veterans here in Minnesota. How's it going?
Well, so take care of that kind of very obvious question that I think everybody has, which is how do you end homelessness right up front? The important piece about ending homelessness isn't just that every vet that's out there right now facing homelessness moves into housing and has a place to live, but really that as a community or as our communities across the state, we have a system in place so that anytime a vet faces a housing crisis, ideally that doesn't lead to homelessness. We prevent it from leading to homelessness. But if we fail to do that, that we have a response that actually quickly connects that veteran back into stable housing, and that capacity has to be there on an ongoing basis. So the danger, the big kind of red flag or concern that exists around saying that we're ending veteran homelessness is people think it's a one-shot mission. And the reality is this is an ongoing mission. The mission is to get to that goal and then to stay at that point, to achieve the outcome and to stick it. And so really this is about both working with the folks that are out there now, but also making sure that on an ongoing basis, we have the response in place for any other vet that faces that challenge.
I think you've explained that pretty well. In my mind, it's even if you could round up all the homeless veterans and put them in homes today, what about the ones tomorrow and the day after tomorrow and the day after that? You're never done with just this job as far as my viewpoint. Now, let's back up a little bit. Special advisor to end veteran homelessness in the state of Minnesota. Where have you been before? What have you done in your lifetime to prepare you for a mission like this? I mean, that's a huge, tough mission.
Well, you know, the great opportunity that I've had prior to coming into this role was to work for the federal government in a capacity with the United States Interagency Council on Homelessness, leading our work on ending veteran homelessness across all of the 19 federal agencies that participate in that council. And that gave me a real opportunity to see not only the incredible commitment and resources that are available to this very difficult mission, but also the incredible progress we're seeing in communities across the country toward achieving that goal. So at the beginning of this year, January 7th, Mayor Mitch Landrieu in New Orleans announced that New Orleans had achieved the goal. And they're joined. They were joined in June by the city of Houston. So these are major metropolitan areas that have not only effectively housed every single veteran they've been able to engage and find in their community, but they've got that capacity in place on an ongoing basis to keep them at that outcome.
It's almost unbelievable.
I think what it really demonstrates is that something that a number of folks have been saying for a lot of years is true, which is that if you have the right resources and you use them on in ways that our evidence actually says are effective, and you implement those best practices well locally, you get the result. And so the trick really in this role and in the work that's happening across the country on this goal is around making sure that that formula holds.
We're speaking with Eric Grumdahl, the Special Advisor on Ending Veterans Homelessness in the State of Minnesota on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Eric, you've been in and around this entire mission. Crusade sounds like a better word than mission to me because, wow, it's going to take you the rest of your life to finish this one up. So you were ready for the challenge and jumped in to try to do this anyway.
Well, and so a couple of things have happened that I think have been really important and critical. One is that at every level of government, there's been a recognition that to do this big job well, we need the right kind of resources. And so there's been a real bipartisan effort to make sure that that communities have the tools that they need to get the job done. And then in Minnesota, the Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, stepped into a really critical void and said, let's figure out how we can help organize all of those resources at a local level around each and every veteran. So we built what's called the Minnesota Veterans Registry, the Minnesota Homeless Veterans Registry. That is a list where we know every single veteran who's joined that list, who's facing homelessness. And by joining the list, vets say, I am willing to have a team in my community come together around what I need to get back into housing. Those teams have been operating since January, and we have seen amazing progress just by virtue of the fact that the folks that have those resources locally are now able to work together and find those solutions for every single vet. Since that registry got started, we've had almost 400 people join the registry, 400 veterans join the registry and their families. And of those 400, 188 as of this morning, 188 of those vets have been housed. So we still have over 200 vets on the list that we're working to house, but we've made amazing progress in a number of communities that are getting very close to the goal. Even in the city of St. Paul and Ramsey County, our list is down to 34 veterans that are in Ramsey County in the city of St. Paul. So we are closing in on that goal, and more importantly, we've created a mechanism where all those partners can come together around each individual vet's needs and make sure that on an ongoing basis, we have that ability to respond to the next housing crisis that comes up.
So, Eric, in the process, have you studied these veterans that have come forward and signed up for the registry to figure out why you're homeless in the first place? What caused this to happen? And I assume the ones that signed up are the ones that want to get back on their feet and get in housing. What about the ones that are out there that are so far down they don't care?
Well, the homelessness is an experience that creates a lot of desperation and hopelessness. And so part of the really critical work that has to happen to make sure you've reached every vet, the goal doesn't mean anything if we actually aren't engaging every vet out there that is facing homelessness. So a critical piece of the work is to actually have really tenacious, engaged, persistent outreach workers who are out visiting homeless shelters, visiting drop-in centers, visiting outdoor locations where people stay, and repeatedly engaging those veterans to say, we have options for you. Are you ready today to say yes to them? And what we've seen is a really dramatic change in the ability of our community to take that information and then turn that into actual housing outcomes. So just a real specific statistic on that. In February, we housed 11 veterans over the month of February. In September, we housed 38. And so that's through the combined force and power of a whole bunch of community resources coming together on this shared mission and saying, we together need to find a way to make it work. And now we have a vehicle to actually collaborate in a way we haven't been able to before.
Eric, we have to take a short break. When I come back, I'd like to talk about all the agencies that are helping you with this crusade to eliminate veteran homelessness here in Minnesota. We're speaking with Eric Grumdahl, Special Advisor on Ending Veteran Homelessness in the State of Minnesota on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been speaking with Eric Grumdahl, Special Advisor on Ending Veterans Homelessness in the State of Minnesota. Eric, as we said, I think I'm going to keep calling that a crusade because it's kind of never-ending, but I like it when you're talking about your mission is twofold. One is let's take care of those veterans that are out there and homeless, and number two is let's start working with the conditions that cause the homelessness so that we can prevent it from happening in the future.
That's right. And we know that for the communities that have reached the goal, they've talked, so City of New Orleans, for example, they've talked about the fact that actually once they've reached the goal, the effort is bigger on an ongoing basis to make sure that that prevention effort is strong and robust and kind of gets out into the, you know, to connect with the vets that are facing a housing crisis before it spirals out.
And the answer to that has to be having multiple resources available and educating people on where to find that help.
Absolutely right. And so to that end, I think one of the most important messages really to leave your listeners with today is that we need everybody's help. We need everybody's eyes and ears out there helping us connect vets that are facing homelessness today with the resources that we have. We can't solve a problem that we're not connected to. And the easy way to do that, that we've made available for any Minnesotan, is you pick up the phone and you dial 888-LINK-VET. That's the State Veterans Linkage Line. And by calling that number, that starts the process of that veteran getting connected with the resource and this team that's coordinating locally in every region of the state.
888-LINK-VET. Now, Eric, I know that you work with a lot of different agencies. We had Mac V on the show from the stand down they did out at the Boy Scout base camp, and we've had a lot of other agencies. Who all do you work with?
So there's a broad team of organizations, and those vary kind of region by region throughout the state, but they include a lot of organizations that have been working to end homelessness for a long time. Organizations like Catholic Charities and St. Stephen's and Simpson Housing Services in Minneapolis. MACV certainly as well. The federal VA is a critical partner in making sure that this happens. So their medical centers deliver a whole range of services that we're connecting vets to. And what's been amazing is that all those organizations have been doing their very hard work over a long period of time. Now, when we sit down around a table and we're looking at an individual veteran's needs, we are able we've had two surprises occur. One is, I wish I had a nickel every time somebody said, oh, wait a minute, you're working with Johnny too? And so what has been happening is that the veteran might be connecting with a number of those organizations without their knowledge. And now what we're able to do, because we actually have a release that the veteran has signed to say, yeah, I want this team to coordinate my care, what we're doing is we're actually creating those partnerships deliberately. And so instead of a vet just going from one agency to the next to piece together the resources, we're piecing it together in a package that actually is working to help end that veteran's homelessness.
So a veteran that might be flailing around looking for any kind of help, now they've got a coordinated effort on behalf of all the agencies, and they share the responsibility and provide the care.
That's right. So the two surprises, one is the number of times that happens that we find out that this person's been going to multiple agencies. The second surprise is that it is very rare that a single organization can solve the whole problem. And so it really is the strength of this collaboration coming together and figuring out, okay, I've got one piece of the solution. Oh, I've got another piece of the solution. And though you see those housing plans emerge literally around the table as we're sitting there trying to figure out how do we make sure this vet and their family gets what they need.
Eric, we just got a couple minutes left, but I got two questions for you, and they might be tough ones, but we got cold weather coming up. This is Minnesota. Here comes January and February. Homelessness doesn't sound like a very good thing. And number two, you must have an outreach program that's going on, and you can't be just sorting through those homeless veterans saying, homeless people saying, okay, you're a veteran, you come help, you're not, you go away. You must have a referral system for the homelessness that people that aren't veterans.
That's right, and there's so anybody who gets connected to any of these outreach activities, if they're not a veteran, there's a whole other kind of process for how that individual gets connected to support. The challenge, frankly, is that we don't have the same kind of resources for any other population that we have for veterans, and so in that way, we believe that by ending veteran homelessness, what we're really showing is how we can end homelessness for any population. And it takes the right resources with that capacity out there, making the connections and engaging vets with the coordination on the back end to make sure that actually that that family gets exactly what they need to end their homelessness.
So the greater whole community is benefiting from what you've learned by trying to eliminate veterans' homelessness.
That's certainly the hope.
Well, that sounds like part of your job description, too, Eric.
Absolutely.
Let's make sure we take care of all of them. But certainly there's a soft spot in my heart for any veterans that are out there on the street. We just got about a minute left. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
So what's been so gratifying to confirm over the time I've been in this role is the very strong sense that I have with any group of Minnesotans that I talk to, which is that nobody wants to see a veteran or anybody facing homelessness. And so there are really two ways that we need everybody's help to achieve this mission and to make sure that we stick with that outcome of having ended veteran homelessness. Number one, we really do need everybody's eyes and ears out there. We need folks that are, when they encounter somebody who's served, when they encounter a veteran, when they know their uncle or sister or cousin might be facing a housing crisis, that they're helping to make that bridge to support through calling that LinkVet line, 888-LINK-VET. The second piece is that there is a really critical role for the private market in these solutions, and that's primarily by finding people who are willing to say, I'm a landlord, I'm a property owner, my business is to rent my property and collect income from rent. And what we find is that the veterans that we're working with most often have a way to pay for housing and have a really hard time finding a landlord in this tight rental market who will say yes. So we're looking for landlords who are willing to say, I'm willing to say that veterans are a priority for me and for the housing that I have available. And landlords can also sign up for this initiative the same way that veterans do by calling 888-LINK-VET.
Okay, so we learned today, if you know about any homeless veterans out there, or if you want to help, call 888-LINK-VET. Eric, thanks for joining us again on Minnesota Military Radio. And good luck on your crusade.
Thank you so much, Tom. Appreciate the opportunity.
That was Eric Grumdahl, the Special Advisor on Ending Veteran Homelessness for the State of Minnesota on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. Sergeant Major, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
It is a pleasure to be here once again with you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure to have you, sir. I understand that there was a big award ceremony for some special people at Camp Ripley recently.
Yeah, that's right. Back on the 4th, on Sunday the 4th of October, we had what's called the Court of Honor ceremony, where we memorialize, and I put that in quotations, individuals who've distinguished themselves in service to the Minnesota Army National Guard. And these people are nominated, and then we induct them into our Court of Honor. It's kind of like the Hall of Fame. And eight people were recognized this time around. You might even know a couple of them. General Trost, General Kelly, Mr. Kerr, and I think you might even know Mr. Wensman. Is that right?
I'm familiar with all four of those, and memorializing those guys in a court of honor is sounds like a worthy occasion.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And then the nice thing is, of course, this court of honor is on display right outside of the military museum right there on Camp Ripley. So these names of all the people that have been put into the Court of Honor, their names are etched in stone up there for all to see.
And who are the other four, sir?
There was a, there is retired Lieutenant General Roger Schultz, retired Colonel David Hansen, retired Colonel Wallace Pansky, and retired Brevet Colonel Geraldine Longfellow. So a total of eight people.
And I'm sure there's a very interesting story behind each and every one of those.
That's right. And, you know, not just anybody can get put into the Court of Honor. They've had to, like I said, have done something that has distinguished themselves or set themselves apart from others to be recognized with this.
So that is quite an honor for those gentlemen and ladies. And I'm sorry I missed that one. That should have been fun to see.
Yeah, it absolutely is. We do it every year, right in that first weekend of October of each year. And when appropriate, we also get to do a memorialization of a building. It's customary to name buildings. And this year, we were able to name our new medical simulation training center, the Mystic. We named it after a Lieutenant Colonel Hortense McKay, who happened to be from the Brainerd area and was a, they called her the Angel of Bataan, was a nurse. She served in the Philippines and was just a great honor to have her family there to see us as we dedicate that building to her and to have a local person to have a building dedicated to them. So it was a great, great event.
Sergeant Major, I understand that for a lot of the rest of the troops that weren't involved in the Court of Honor, Chuck Haas over in Hugo put on another event.
Yeah, he did. And there's about 120 people there to participate in their pheasant hunt out there at Wild Wings of Oneka. And, you know, they just put on a great show for us. They take care of us so well with the pheasant hunt and sporting clays and, of course, the big attraction is that wild game lunch or dinner that they put on for us. Just fantastic food, and just can't thank the Hugo Yellow Ribbon Network enough and all the sponsors for taking care of all of our veterans and soldiers to participate in that event. Just a great deal.
And that's a big pleasure for a lot of the soldiers that have been deployed and missed the hunting season. And when they come back, they get an opportunity to go over there and get a little practice in.
Yeah, it sure is nice. And I'm taking credit for one. I'm pretty sure I got one out there. You know what? Nonetheless, it's still a great time and good to spend some time with fellow soldiers and, of course, the Yellow Ribbon Network volunteers and supporters.
Sergeant Major, once again, we're out of time, but thanks for joining us again today.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you so much, Tom, and keep up the great work. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you, sir. That was Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Brigadier General Nick Ostapenko, Eric Grundahl, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Shelotow of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about Minnesota's American Legion Department Commander and the Minnesota National Guard's 34th CAB Deployment Wrap-Up Report. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.